Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's get straight to the docket. First, new details on the Christy Chen Fiji murder. That's right. Newlywed pharmacist Christy Chen had a drunken argument with her husband after he inappropriately danced with another person at a party before she was found beaten to death and slumped in the small space between the toilet and the wall of the luxury Fiji honeymoon bungalow. Now, the 36-year-old was found deceased on July 9th at the secluded $3,500-a-night Turtle Island Resort, which only hosts 14 guests at a time. Her husband, Bradley Robert Dawson, has been charged with her murder. He has maintained that the death was a complete accident. She probably just slipped and fell, got her head stuck between the toilet and the wall. These things happen all the time, particularly in Fiji. Anyway, the couple, who met in November of 2021, married just 3 months later after a whirlwind romance. Chen had previously been engaged. She was Dawson's second wife, and he had married his first in Fiji in September of 2019, according to a wedding registry. It is unclear when he separated from his first wife. Miss Chen was found dead just 2 days after they checked into the hotel, which her parents, who were regulars there, had paid for. Now, the night Chen died, she and Dawson had attended a party dubbed Family Fun Night with the island staff and other guests on the beach, where both were very drunk, according to witnesses. Apparently, there was some tension between the couple when Dawson started acting inappropriately with someone else at the party. That could happen, particularly when you're on your honeymoon. The couple were apparently enjoying themselves and drinking quite a bit, and towards the end, they looked troubled, according to the witness. Now, it is understood the couple then left the party, and their argument continued on the beach before they headed back to their private bungalow about midnight. Now, not long after that, the guests in the bungalow next to them said they heard arguing, a loud scream, and then silence. Miss Chen was found bloodied on the bathroom floor by a personal butler around midday. She had suffered multiple traumatic injuries to her head and shoulders, lacerations to her face, and blunt force trauma to the head, according to the autopsy. A witness has apparently come forward and stated that the lid of the toilet's cistern was cracked and broken. The couple's personal butler found her body squashed and slumped between the tiny space between the toilet and the wall, badly beaten and covered in blood. Her body was apparently so badly beaten that they were actually unable to embalm her, and her parents had to cremate her before bringing her ashes back to the United States. It's also reported that she suffered such deep lacerations to both sides of her head near her eyes that the embalming fluid would apparently have leaked out. On the night that Miss Chen was killed, Dawson was seen walking the length of the Turtle Island in the early hours of the morning by the night watchman before he went back towards his private bungalow. Dawson left his GPS watch and mobile phone in the bungalow, but took his wallet and passport before fleeing across the water 1.2 miles away to a secluded beach, an island called Matakawa Levu Island. Police suspect that he was headed toward the mainland, which is about 2 or 3 hour boat ride away, in the hopes of hopefully fleeing to Fiji. But Dawson never made it that far, and he was discovered with cuts and bruises about 3 p.m. on July 10th by a local man as he was walking towards the island village. That witness has stated that Mr. Dawson told him that he used a kayak to paddle to the island between 2 and 3 a.m. on Saturday morning after having a fight with Miss Chen. Now, the kayak Dawson claimed he traveled on has never been found. This is now according to Miss Chen's family attorney. By the time Dawson emerged, he had been missing for 36 hours, and police had put basically an all-points bulletin out for him, looking for him, as the couple's personal butler found Miss Chen dead and covered on the floor. Needless to say, that would raise a few alarms when the second guest isn't there. Apparently, Mr. Dawson kept claiming to everybody that we had a fight, and offered no start or end to the story, just saying that we had a fight. And then he got in a kayak and paddled away 1.2 miles away from the location. Like I said, unless Miss Chen shoved her head between the toilet and the wall, bruising herself in that process, ultimately killing herself. It would seem as though, that's right, the husband would be the bad guy here. We'll give him the presumption of innocence, but it's not looking good for him. All right, next on the docket, Brian Laundry. Will this saga never end? Apparently not. Well, Brian Laundry may have made two more confessions. I think everyone knows that he did it. We know that he wrote it on the book, but guess what? The litigation in the civil matter continues because the other two other confessions could include one on a digital device, according to the lawyer representing the Petito family, and the attorney, Pat Riley, who's handling the civil suit on behalf of Joseph Petito and Nicole Schmidt, said the FBI told him or other possible confessions made by Brian Laundry. One confession was believed to have been recorded on a digital device. The second confession was made in some type of written form. I don't know of anybody who doesn't think he did it. I still think he got a questionable suit as it relates to suing the parents. It's litigation. The court has to take the allegations as true, and it lets it go through the whole litigation process before maybe the matter will resolve. Needless to say, we'll continue to follow that story because it's Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry. Next, Johnny Depp, speaking of cases that I don't think are going to end anytime soon. Johnny Depp's, obviously we know, ex-wife Amber Heard filed an appeal. And Johnny Depp wants everyone to know that the fact that he filed a cross appeal has nothing to do with the money, at least according to his attorney, Camille Vasquez. Now, obviously, for those who don't know, the jury in Fairfax County, Virginia, found that Ms. Heard had defamed Johnny Depp in the 2018 op-ed piece that she wrote and awarded Mr. Depp over $10 million, while Depp was also ordered to pay Ms. Heard $2 million for defamation by Depp's now former attorney, Adam Waldman. Heard filed her own notice of appeal earlier this month, while Depp followed suit shortly thereafter. Now, Ms. Vasquez said that Depp's team had expected the appeal and that Depp filed his own appeal so that the court could have a full record. That's her statement. We'll talk about that in a second. We have to protect our client's interest, which is absolutely true. This was never about the money for Mr. Depp, according to Ms. Vasquez, but in order to protect his interest as his representatives, we have to respond to the appeal with his own appeal. Ms. Vasquez also stated that if Ms. Heard had not appealed, that they would not have appealed the case either. Now, let's give this a little bit of context. Obviously, when one party appeals a case, particularly in a civil case, the other side has to defend the appeal. Now, they could say, we're not going to appeal anything that's taken place, and you can make sure the record is complete by including all the exhibits, all the transcripts, everything in there so the court can make its record based upon that. No. You file the cross appeal because you're using it as a tactic for negotiation. So I get it, Johnny Depp, it's not about the money, but it is still about winning. And that's what it really came down to in this case. It was about winning. And guess what? He won and Ms. Heard lost, and she's going to drag it on forever. It's just the way she is. This is why I don't do divorce work, ladies and gentlemen. I've done two divorces in 27 years, and I swear I would never do another one again because it wasn't about simply adding up the property, assets, and debts, and splitting it evenly down the middle. No, it was about usually hurting the other person. People love to hate each other for a long, long time. I think that's what Ms. Heard wants to do with Mr. Depp. Pretty obvious. Next, a cable company has been ordered to pay, get this, $7 billion in damages to the family of an 83-year-old Texas grandmother by the name of Betty Thomas, who was brutally stabbed to death in her home by a Spectrum cable employee back in 2019. Now, this guy, Roy James Holden, an installer for Spectrum, owned by Charter Communications, had performed work at Thomas's home in Irvine, Texas in December of 2019. Holden returned the next day in uniform and using the company's van while he was off posing as if he was on the job and killed her, and then used her credit cards for a shopping spree after the murder. Now, in June, a Dallas jury found Charter Communications negligent and grossly negligent in Thomas's death. the jury awarded a verdict of $375 million in compensatory damages and said the company was responsible for paying 90% of it after the trial revealed systemic failures in the company's pre-employee screening, hiring, and supervision practices. Now, on Tuesday, the verdict for punitive damages was announced, bringing the total to $7.37 billion with a B. Billion. Now, trial testimony in the case revealed that Charter Spectrum hired Mr. Holden without verifying his employment, which would have revealed that he had lied about his work history. The testimony included red flags, alleging that they ignored these red flags by Spectrum's supervisors. The facts came out that Charter Spectrum continually refused to correct its negligent safety practices. The jury also found that after Thomas's family filed a lawsuit, attorneys for the communication company used a forged document to try to force the lawsuit into a closed-door arbitration where the results would have been secret and damages for the murder would have been limited to those in the amount of the final bill. The jury found that Charter Spectrum committed forgery beyond a reasonable doubt, conduct that constitute a first-degree felony under Texas law, and lawyers for the families further stated that there was a pattern of thefts by Charter Spectrum employee against customers totaling more than $2,500 in the preceding several years. Attorneys noted that even after the grisly murder, her family was hit with a bill from Spectrum that included a $58 charge for Holden's service call. Ooh, bad fact. The unpaid bills were eventually sent to a collection agency. Ooh, another bad fact. Now, Mr. Holden was arrested on the capital murder charges on December 13th of 2019 in connection with Ms. Thomas's death. He pled guilty to murder in April of 2021 and is serving a life sentence. Now, a spokesperson for Charter Communications said they plan to appeal the verdict and arguing that the employee was solely responsible for Thomas's death. They also stated that their heart goes out to Mrs. Thomas's family in the wake of the senseless, tragic crime. The responsibility for the act rests solely with Mr. Holden, who was not on duty, and we are grateful he is in prison for life. While we respect the jury and the justice system, we strongly disagree with the verdict. The company argued the murder was not foreseeable and called the plaintiff's claim wrongdoing categorically false. Well, let's talk about this. Mr. Holden off work, going back to the place where he had done a service call previously. I get it. The company sends a bill for the service call where the victim gets murdered. Ooh, bad, bad fact. You know what these people could have used? CrimeTalkSearch.com, where you could have done a background search and found out, you know, things about Mr. Holden that you wouldn't have found out anybody else. Yes, it's negligent for not checking other people's criminal backgrounds when you hire him these days, ladies and gentlemen. But is it reasonably foreseeable that they're going to commit murder? Probably not. I get it. Big verdict. $7.37 billion with a B. Somehow I think that is going to be reversed on appeal, or at a minimum, the amount awarded is going to be reduced significantly. Just because an employee works for you and they go do something in their off time, that's hard to say that the company should be held responsible for that. Unless the employee said, I'm going to go back over to the place where I was doing a service call today and harm people. I don't recall that in the facts. I get it. It's a bad case, bad facts. But I think that one may be coming back on appeal. We'll continue to follow that one just because the verdict is so big. Please go to CrimeTalkSearch.com. Sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to CrimeTalkSearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, you know how we have talked about protection orders only being worth basically the paper they're written on? Let me present Exhibit A. So this guy who is in jail on a charge of attempted strangulation has new charges related to hundreds of violations of a no contact order, all of which investigators say took place from the jail. Please meet Justin Wayne Gould. He's 28. He's been charged with felony intimidation of a witness and 8 misdemeanor counts of violation of a domestic violence no contact order after police discovered that he had allegedly violated the order 317 times. Now, Mr. Gould was originally charged with felony attempted strangulation on July 2nd after he reportedly, allegedly attacked a woman at a park in Idaho Falls. He appeared in court on July 19th, where he and the victim argued that the no contact order be modified or dismissed in its entirety. Because of multiple other pending charges, the judge denied that request. The Idaho Falls police was contacted by the Bonneville County Sheriff's Deputy on July 21st after finding what Gould had been violating the no contact order and went into place on July 5th. Now, according to court documents, Mr. Gould appeared upset after the judge did not grant his request to dismiss the no contact order and called and spoke with the victim 3 times after court. Of course he did. Now, Mr. Gould has been making phone calls to the victim and violating the no contact order a total of 317 times. 202 of the calls were reportedly from Gould's inmate account, and 115 of the other calls came from another inmate's account. According to court documents, only 125 of the calls to the victim were completed, and the rest came back as no answer calls. On July 21st, Idaho Falls police spoke with the victim, and she confirmed that Gould had been calling her from jail. She also told the police that Mr. Gould is blaming her for what happened and that she is not doing anything to help him. That's what narcissists do, and that's what kind of the whole cycle of violence and domestic violence that comes around. It's your fault that I'm in jail. If you were a better girlfriend, I wouldn't have had to strangle you at the park. He's a catch. He's a catch, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just get that out there. I'm sure by the time this video is done airing, he will have 50 women writing him letters in the jail saying, "You're right. It's her fault." Well, according to the police report, the victim said that Gould is blaming this all on her and it's her fault that she called the police. The victim also told police that she told Gould that he was the one that was trying to kill her and to call the cops because he couldn't stop himself. According to police, Mr. Gould would call the victim and talk in third person, thinking this would make it so that the jail would not know they were talking back and forth. Gould allegedly told the victim, "Don't dig my hole any deeper and tell the judge that he was off his meds or high as effing drunk." Investigators say that Gould also told the victim, "If you loved me and you wanted me out, you would be telling the people that this blank and that I didn't do any of what was alleged." Now, Gould appeared in court on the new charges on July 26. His bond is being kept at $50,000 and a preliminary hearing was set for August 9th. If convicted, Mr. Gould could face up to 13 years in prison for felony witness intimidation and the no contact order violations. Well, let me just tell you, ladies and gentlemen, done this case where defendant calls victim, defendant writes letters, victim writes letters back, defendant keeps letters under his bunk in the jail, all violations. Yes, and although they were misdemeanor violations, there were so many of them, by the time the client got out of custody, they would have named the jail after him. He would have been there so long. He would have been there longer than most of the employees. The employees would have retired before he got out. But let me tell you, one of the first things any attorney worth their salt is going to do is tell the client, don't talk about the facts of the case on the phone. They are recorded. But no one ever believes the attorney. okay? No one believes them. Now, I get it, back in the old days, it was difficult to listen to phone calls. They literally had to go get the tapes and the reels. But now these phone calls are recorded. They even warn you that it's being recorded. You have to put in your identifying information. And it's like downloading a song to your phone. It is that simple to download these days. And nothing worse than getting more discovery from the district attorney saying, we have your client's 300 phone calls right here, and he's talking about the case. And you're going to be like, that's great. That's great. Because I told him in writing not to do that. So it's not like he wasn't warned. Now, Mr. Gould, he's got problems. He's got some real issues with women. My guess is he's not the catch that some people may think he is. And ladies, if you think you want to write to Mr. Gould and say he's just misunderstood, that you would have been a better girlfriend, and then you never would have had to been choked, I guess you could write him. But I'm telling you, stay far, far away. Past performance is indicative of future results. Next on the docket, a 43-year-old Pembroke Pines, Florida man who used the United States Postal Service to solicit, plan, and pay for the murder of his former girlfriend's new love interest pled guilty in federal court to a charge of using mail to commit murder. That's right, there's a statute for that, 18 U.S. Code, Section 1958. And as part of his guilty plea, Ryan Hadid admitted that in September of 2021, he mailed a letter to the intended hitman requesting murder services. He stated, quote, I need someone eliminated. I've been told you can arrange that. $10,000, all in cash and upfront. The person is located in Tampa. Now, in that letter and two later ones, Hadid instructed the intended hitman to signal acceptance of the offer by posting marked sheets of paper on a storefront window, among other things. And then on November 10th of 2021, the intended hitman received a final mailing from Hadid that included a description and picture of the man that Mr. Hadid wanted killed, the victim's home address, and the likely travel schedule, as well as a deadline for the murder. Because, you know, the job expands to the amount of time given. If you don't give deadlines, sometimes these things never get done. Also inside the envelope was $10,000 in cash. Mr. Hadid had left the country on a one-way ticket the same day the hitmen received the cash and the pictures. And during the secondary customs inspections of Hadid, when he returned to the United States from his international trip, well, additional evidence of the crime was uncovered. Law enforcement officers who had learned of the crime arrested Hadid, and federal prosecutors filed a case against him in December of 2021. The intended victim remains alive and is still romantically involved with Mr. Hadid's former girlfriend. There you go, Mr. Hadid. Not only did you not get the new boyfriend love interest, he's still with her. You probably brought them closer together. Silly Mr. Hadid, thinking he'd get away with it. My goodness. And finally, our dumb criminal. A Northern California burglar returned to the scene of the crime this weekend after he forgot his keys inside the donut company's corporate office. The thief stole some petty cash from Johnny's Donuts, specifically from the office in the San Francisco Bay Area on Saturday night, according to the police. And in another twist, he also grabbed the keys to a bakery vehicle, but didn't steal the vehicle itself. Now, the San Rafael police are seeking the public's assistance to help identify the burglar who used an unknown tool to manipulate the office's doorknob and to get inside the office around 10 p.m., according to the police. That would probably be a screwdriver, which is also possession of burglary tools. Now, the crime was reported to police on Monday. Surveillance video shows the man moving between the office and the back storage area, where he pried open a filing cabinet. The police said that the thief took a bank bag, an unknown amount of cash, and part of the investigation is finding out why this specific business was targeted. No donuts were taken either. I'm going to guess it was an inside job. Just saying. Probably someone that felt comfortable enough to leave their keys behind. Anyway, all right, that's all we have for you today. I hope today was a little more upbeat. Some people thought that, hey, maybe Scott, you need to take a little bit of a vacation. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm just getting a little cynical these days. When things are just so much more commonsensical and you think that people would just make good decisions. Just saying. If not, that's what I'm here for, to help you get out of your poor decision making. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Top. Have a wonderful weekend.